What's up, Noll Nation? Michael, it is Portal Madness season. It has begun, and it has been a really busy couple of weeks here for Florida State. We have a lot of ground to cover in this episode. We have first meetings with coaches. We have portal ins and outs. We have targeted prospects. We have so many things that we got to talk about. Is Florida State going to have a new quarterback for 2025? It sure looks that way, and we're going to talk about all that today. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. This is going to be an action-packed one. And I'm excited to jump into all this stuff because, you know, now that 2024 is officially, that book is closed and put on the shelf, man, we knew this was going to be a busy offseason, and it has lived up to the hype over past week or two. So thank you much. I said I wasn't going to say that, Michael. I said I wasn't going to say thank you so much for joining me. Someone actually left us a comment on the last episode that said it's funny. And I'm like, look, I went for about a year and a half by myself before Michael joined the show.
Yeah.
And I love having him, but I just, you know, sometimes you're set in your way. So not thank you for joining me. I'm glad you're here. How are you, my friend?
Well, thank you for asking how I'm doing. Yeah. No, I'm doing great. Listen, I mean, it's almost like as soon as the clock hit zero, I heard the Arms of an Angel come on, you know, that song where they play with the dogs, you know, it's like in an arms, you know, for Florida State's football season, had a little funeral for them. And Now we're ready to move on to 2024. And let me just tell you, the moment that clock hit zero, it has been all gas, no brakes for Florida State, for Mike Norvell. And so, yeah, let's get into this episode. Talk about all the things that have gone on this offseason.
Yeah, we turned off from In the Arms of an Angel and turned on Jesus Take the Wheel because because we need some divine intervention to get back in shape for 2025. So, you know, the first thing I want to talk about, Michael, is I want to share one big overall thought about this offseason process so far, right? And that is, there's been obviously coaching hires. There's been roster movement. There's obviously some names. They haven't got any commitments from the portal yet, but it's only been open for 3 days now. This is day three as we're recording right now on the 11th. So they haven't got any commits yet, but those will probably be happening relatively soon in the next week or so. But we have names that they've offered. So you can kind of get a grasp on what they're looking for out of the portal. Now, that overall thought that I wanted to share and get your opinion on as well is, every move that Mike Norvell seems to be making this offseason is kind of from a high floor perspective. These are high floor actions. You go out and you get a proven OC in Gus Malzahn, former head coach, a lot of experience. Maybe he's not an elite play caller this late in his career, but you know he's not bad. He's good. He can win you some games. You look at, you get a proven power four DC. I don't know if he's elite or not, but he's pretty daggone good. Yeah. He's proven at the power four level. You also look at a lot of the familiarity. This word's going to kick my butt today. Familiarity among the staff. You get Gus brings his offensive line coach. Gus and the O-line coach worked with Mike Norvell at Tulsa.
Yep.
You look at the defensive staff. They brought the three of those guys that come over, worked together before. And so I like a lot of this continuity. I think that's good as well. You look at a lot of the transfers that they've offered. And that is, when some of the names we're going to get into later, it's no longer about guys who have a nice logo sitting by their name. It's about guys that have proven production at the college level, wherever that comes from.
Right.
We were talking before the show. You need more Tatum Bethunes than you do Sean Murphys, right?
Absolutely.
You need more productive UCF linebackers than you do Sean Murphys from, you know, Alabama, who didn't have any production there. So everything it feels like they're doing is from a high floor perspective. And the reason I feel like they're doing that is because Mike Norvell knows he needs to win, and he needs to win right now. You need probably, we feel like, about 7 to 8 wins in 2025 to get to 2026 and beyond. I think the schedule allows it if you get this right as well. So I don't think, you know, also we have to keep in mind that coming off an ugly 2-10 season, you aren't necessarily going to get the cream of the crop.
That's right.
But you've gotten some of the best available that you could have gotten.
Yeah.
And so I think right now it's kind of like, get the best you can get, take the fewest amount of chances possible, and go win some games.
Yeah.
And I know some people may not be excited about seeing us take guys from the G5 or the Gus Malzahn hire or things like that. But again, I think he knows that he's got to win. And I think he's making those high floor moves to win in 2025.
Absolutely. You're going to hear me say this a lot today, Jesse, and in today's episode, is that this year, this upcoming year, 2025, is Mike's either extension year or Mike's pink slip year. And yeah. What I mean by that is in the sheer fact that whatever happens this year will determine whether or not Mike gets to see the almost full breadth of his contract that he just signed, or if this is it. This is he's done. It's become such an untenable situation that Florida State is forced to just pay the payout and go get a better head coach who's going to fix the problem that basically Mike and that previous staff created. And so what that means by being either an extension year or a pink slip year is that Mike cannot, this staff cannot go out and get big time backups. Let's just call it that. Let's call them big time backups. Like last season, after a 13-1 playoff snub year, we went out and signed big time backups. We signed backups from Alabama. We signed backups from Georgia. We signed backups from other big programs. And we thought, okay, that they're from these pedigree programs like we are. And so they're just going to come in and they're, you know, they had no production whatsoever or very little of that production. And so we're going to be able to, because of our track records, we're going to be able to produce and get them going. And what that shows that actually, no, I mean, you look at some of those players that came from Alabama, Georgia, and all like that, and they were some of our least producing players. They regressed in a lot of ways or didn't show a thing. They weren't worth the money that Florida State paid them to come be here. And so that was one of the many microcosm reasons that Florida State went 2-10. Well, this year, Florida State's going to have to go out and get some. You know, they're going to get some big name players from big programs, but these players have produced. And then they're going to go get some players that from some no name programs, you know, Incarnate Word or Mississippi State Community College University, Stanford and Sons. Right.
Yeah.
But this player was a very high starter producer for that school. And that's what they need to do because Mike needs producers. He needs players who've been on the field, who've played at the highest level and have done something, because this is going to determine exactly what he's able to do moving forward for the 2025 season.
Yeah, I agree, because it's very rare that you see this work out when you take like a Trey Benson's, what we were talking before the show, is probably one of the only ones I can think of that came in with literally nothing and panned out very well.
Right.
But, you know, you look at Kier Thomas, you look at Jamie Robinson. Jamie Robinson is probably the best example. He was a good starter, not anything like great at South Carolina, came in, was an all ACC player for you 2 years in a row, your leading tackler 2 years in a row. He was a proven college producer, went on to be an NFL draft pick. So that's what you need. And I think that's what they're really going to go after right now, because they know they got to win right now.
Right.
And they also know that that success will continue to roll into the future, where it will help recruiting. It will help them upgrade the staff at certain positions if they need to.
Right.
And then they can focus on winning the big one down the road. But for 2025, I mean, if everything falls in place, great. You make the playoffs, you win the conference.
Right.
Man, you got to win 8 games, right?
Absolutely.
And something like that. And, you know, he took a lot of chances on the last staff with guys like Alex Atkins and guys like Adam Fuller. They weren't proven at the Power Four level. You took chances and it just so happened to work out because of the fact that you loaded that roster with talent. And so, you know, that's just one thought that I did want to share before we got into this, because I think it's a smart approach, right? And I think that's a lot of the approach that they took before, by getting proven production and then putting those guys on the field and letting them do what they know how to do. And that's produce at the college level.
No, absolutely. And I just want to say this real quick. I have been thoroughly impressed. Now, this hasn't changed my, you know, Mike's got to produce this year, but I've been thoroughly impressed, like you said, that Mike went out and said, okay, I am not going to go hire coaches who haven't proven that they, one, can't develop, two, that they can recruit the high school, and three, they can build great culture of people, right? So he went out and got Gus Malzahn, who's been as an OC to the national championship and won it, and then been as a head coach to the national championship and lost. By the way, Gus, I heard you say you didn't have the signs today. You're a liar. We know you're a liar. We know you had the signs, okay?
100%.
But anyways, you're on our side now, so it's all water under the bridge. He went out and got Tony White, who has produced top 20 level defenses, unlike Adam Fuller, who had not done much of that and only been at Marshall and Memphis as defensive coordinators. He went out and got that. He went out and got Terrence Knightley, who literally has produced D linemen who are in the NFL, who are doing those things. He went out and got Evan Cooper, who, yes, he was out of coaching last year, but he has produced over and over again. He is a great recruiter. And he got Herb Hand, right, who's an incredible offensive line coach. So you see he's getting these veteran, proven coordinators and position coaches who can recruit, who can develop, and who can make something happen, because he is no longer doing this like, well, we're going to like get my best friends, buddies who like are up and comers but haven't done anything. And so that's been very key. And I will give Mike kudos for that.
Yeah, I really got to say, man, so far, other than the quarterback situation, which we're about to talk about here in just a second, because I know that's what's on everybody's mind, I got to give so far this offseason like a B plus, right? Yeah. I think if I had to give it a grade from everything so far, and it seems like Mike is really kind of getting this thing back together here. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, maybe you get a little bit more proven OC or something like that. You know,
maybe you don't lose Solomon Thomas, you know,
right. Things like that. You could have got the O-line hire done a little bit sooner, things like that. We'll talk about all that in a minute, but I think so far it's been a good offseason for FSU so far. Now, I do want to share a little bit of big news, Michael, and that is actually from today's sponsor, right? This is okay, one I know you guys are probably like, oh, from what? Save 10% Code Spear? No, hold your horses. This is a big one, guys. You're gonna wanna get back on this train of, because you know, Michael, I still wear my FSU gear everywhere.
That's right.
I know everybody's like, oh, look, an FSU fan. I'm like, hey, watch out. But I have some news to share with you guys. Alumni Hall, our title sponsor, is running the Alumni Holiday sale right now, where you can get 30% off online or in store with code Seminole30. So you can go load up with new FSU gear and get ready for the comeback coming next year at this program. So make sure you check those guys out, alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page, or you can shop in store at 1415 Timberlane Road, and that is 30% off with code Seminole30. So, Michael, let's talk about this portal madness. Let's talk about this quarterback situation, because I know that's what everybody's wanting to hear about. Man, the portal, last year we thought the portal was going to be crazy, right? And it really kind of wasn't. It was more of a timid portal season.
That's right.
Boy, they kicked the door off the hinges this year. It has been a wild portal season so far. There are so many big names in this portal. And one of those big names, actually, from what I saw last on 247, the number one portal prospect right now is Luke Cromanhawk. And it's unfortunate that you lose him. Obviously, it came out today before we jumped on to record this that he has officially entered the portal. Now, obviously, he can withdraw his name, but the way things have went down, I don't expect that to happen, especially if Florida State ends up taking Thomas Castellanos, which we're going to talk about next. And so I think you pretty much can probably sell your stock there. I think he's pretty much out of the picture now. Again, like I said, he can always come back. He can always withdraw his name, but it does seem like he's going to be out. And it's unfortunate, because I think this is the guy that you had really put your hope and, you know, in the future in. I think it's unfortunate that, frankly, you kind of wasted a lot of snaps at the end of the season thinking that he was going to be your quarterback for next year. And now you can't get those snaps back. Those could have easily went to Brock or Trevor. Yeah. There are a lot of reports around why this happened. I don't want to assume anything, because you know what they say about using the word assume.
That's right.
But we'll just touch on some of the reports that we heard. We heard that they asked for seven figures. Man, this NIL era in college football is absolutely wild. Like, if you are a freshman quarterback on a 2-10 team that has one win against the worst team in FCS, and you can ask for seven figures, this sport is absolutely broken.
Bonkers.
At that point, I 100% don't blame them for letting them walk.
Correct.
I just don't, man, because I think last year you saw the byproduct of letting these players hold you over the coals for money. We said this in the, you know, going into the offseason, like, Mike, you have to be strong. I think you said that. You have to be willing to tell these guys, we're not doing that. You got to go. And so whether that seven-figure report is true or not, because his dad did come out to one reporter on the beat and said that that is not true. Now, we don't know that. Obviously, obviously you're going to deny that. It kind of went in the direction of he wants to be quarterback one, and he wants to start next year. And they know that he's not going to do that when they bring in Thomas Castellanos, because they saw the way they handled the DJU situation. And to me, I look at this like, man, you really shouldn't have expected to play this year anyway, because if DJU doesn't get hurt, he probably never sees the field.
Correct.
So you were going to take a redshirt year this year anyway. So then you go into next year. Say you get Castellanos in, and say he doesn't go out. You take your redshirt year next year, and then you're the starter as a redshirt sophomore going into year three in the program.
Right.
Obviously, we saw flashes here and there of what Luke can do. Obviously, I think he would have fit into Gus's offense. He's a mobile guy. He's got a big arm. I don't think it's that he couldn't fit in the offense.
Right.
Maybe he's not the prototypical Gus quarterback, but I think he could have fit in the offense. They could have adjusted some things for him. So you go into year three as a redshirt sophomore, as a starter, but like even the flashes that he showed you, you could tell he needed another year of development because of the things that we just talked about. Mike Norvell needs to win next year. You can't take chances on someone you don't know can go out and win you games. That's not against a crappy FCS team.
Right.
So to me, man, I look at it like, it is what it is, right? You're going to lose players, right? It's just going to happen in the portal era. You're going to get some where you're like, okay, that's no loss. You're going to get some that break your heart. I know people are mad at Mike for thinking, you know, for doing this. There's so many moving pieces. I can't really blame anybody, but I will say this, man. One, NIL is wild if he really did ask for seven figures. And two, look, man, this is not a shot at Luke Cromenhawk. This is a pretty much a thought of mine on every player nowadays, it seems like. Man, the first sign of competition comes around and these kids bolt for the door every single time. Like it used to be the thing, man. You didn't even touch the field till you were like a junior or a senior, you know, and then you had one or two good years. You go to the NFL.
That's right.
Luke could have came out as a redshirt sophomore like Jameis.
Yep.
Had one or two good years and gone to the NFL. But, you know, you want to be quarterback one as a redshirt freshman with no proof that you can go win games. I don't blame Mike for making the decision for letting him walk.
Well, and I just think it's so interesting is when you look at this NIL era of college football right now, you know, before the house settlement, before we have, you know, basically a kind of a collective bargaining, before we have a cap, you know, right now it's the Wild West. And I mean, you imagine an NFL quarterback, you know, first round draft pick, second round, third round, fourth round, going to a NFL team and saying, okay, if you don't start me, then I'm out. No, like, cause we got contracts. We got all these things in place. This has been my whole thing about, and I know we're not talking about NIL and giving a referendum on that, but this is my whole thing about this era of college football right now. It's just so chaotic and uncontrollable. There's no regulations. So when you have a situation like Luke Cromenhawk, who comes in and was not supposed to play at all this year, that was the plan, was not supposed to play at all this year, only got in the last several games because one, DJU got hurt. Also, Brock wasn't doing well playing wise. And so he got in the game. And then from there, now I don't know if any of the rumors are true, so I'm not going to say that's true or that's not. Right. If they ask for $7 million, if they ask for seven figures, you know what? Good on Mike and the battle's in for saying, you know what? Thanks for your services, but good luck somewhere else. Cause we're not going to pay that for somebody who wasn't proven, somebody who, when they actually had time to throw the ball, you could tell was like holding onto the ball too long. Wasn't going through his progressions very well. Yes. Yeah. He showed flashes that were great. And like, man, has the capability of someday being a really great quarterback. But at this point in time, you're not worth seven figures, bro. You got to know your market. And if there's a school out there that is worth paying, that is going to pay you seven figures, then you should go get it. It just ain't going to be here at Florida State. I don't know if that's true or not. I also heard that, you know, there was rumors that, you know, Gus Malzahn and his high school coach are connected and there's some maybe tension or I don't really know, something like that. That might've been a thing as well too. Who knows what reason is for. The thing that you have to understand is this. This is a 2-10 squad, 2-10. And the thing that feels more in line with why I think Luke might have left is because when you look at this season and you look at the players around him, does Luke feel like this is going to set him up for success? Mm-hmm. He got a chance to play several games, and now they're saying, we're going to go get a portal quarterback. Now, they didn't say that they were going to go get a portal quarterback to start. They were going to go get a portal quarterback to compete with who's ever in that room.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like your point of like, have we lost the edge of competition with the introduction of NIL?
Right.
I mean, that was already a problem already, was that, you know, players would come in and get frustrated and mad about not being able to play. And then by their, you know, junior year, they're ready to transfer or whatever. But, you know, there were a lot of restrictions on players then. Now with the introduction of, well, you can just transfer freely after every year, it was like, well, okay, if I don't like it here because I can't start, I'm going to go jump somewhere else and play. But yeah, then the case of the matter is maybe not. I mean, let's just look at Tate Rodemaker, who right, literally abandoned this team. And I use the word abandon because the boy abandoned the team before the Orange Bowl, left, went to Southern Miss, played like a couple games, got benched, and is now back in the portal again.
Yeah.
Bro, A.J. Duffy, back in the portal again.
Right.
How many times did Brock Purdy transfer?
Right. Yeah. Right? How many teams does it take before you realize
maybe you're not the problem?
Maybe it's not the team. And even correct, then, like, if you weren't trusted to be the starter on a 2-10 team going into the next season, that they felt they needed to get somebody else. Because do keep in mind, like, you saw he's got a big arm. You saw he right, can run. But he's only played football. He only started 2 years in high school.
Correct.
And so, like you said, the reads, the holding the ball, the taking the sacks, like all that type of stuff, man. That's the stuff that had to be developed, not his arm strength, right, not his legs. I think he's got an NFL ceiling, and maybe there's some aspect of like, look, Gus's offense doesn't have a proven history of producing NFL quarterbacks. I understand that argument too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, maybe the good news for us about Gus's offense is you can turn a DB into a quarterback and that's make it right, to the national championship. So
that's right.
That's good too, because maybe it's an offense that can cover up the lack of development of quarterbacks right, in Tallahassee, which is a whole nother conversation. That is becoming a red flag. And I mean, that's the thing, man, is like, I will say that it's hard to say they haven't developed really anybody, because I don't think any of the ones that came before Jordan were really any good, right? Right, we were taking guys because we needed bodies. Jordan developed under them. He turned into a great college quarterback. You can't say that they weren't going to develop Luke Kromenhawk because right, he's only a freshman. So we'll right, never know. We thought right, you had to get something out of Kromenhawk, out of Brock Glenn, and out of Trevor Jackson. Out of the ones that you had in the bush, so to speak, you had to get something out of them. But right, now we just won't know out of one of the three. So, right, and you know, the other two are young, so we'll see how it turns out. It's a red flag. I mean, it's a big concern while we're in year five going into, you know, year six, and we cannot develop a quarterback. That's a big concern. And then you bring in an OC that doesn't have a great history with quarterbacks either. But again, you run an offense that's not overly dependent on the quarterback being great. So I guess that's good enough. But yeah, man, I mean, it's wild times in the NIL and the portal era. And guys just, you know, there's not a whole lot of loyalty to the program anymore. We as fans have to remember that guys don't necessarily always play for the logo on the front. They play right, for the name on the back. And right, so that is something. And one quick thing before we kind of get into Castellanos here, man. Speaking of wild NIL stuff, I don't know if you saw the demands with the Florida outside linebacker, Jack Pyburn.
I did not see this. Like, no.
So he hit the portal because he went to Florida and he wants $45,000 per month. He wants a guaranteed starting position at outside linebacker. He wants to be guaranteed that he's going to play on third downs, and he wants more snaps in the rotation. And Florida wasn't willing to agree, so he hit the portal. That is crazy, dude. Like, you are basically telling the coaches how they can coach their team and how much they're going
to
pay.
That doesn't even happen in the NFL. That's my point.
Exactly. And so, like, I mean, I'd love to have him on our team, but not if you're going to have those. I mean, he can play every third down. He can play every down if he wants here. But, you know, but, man, it's gotten crazy. And I'm not saying that I'm not for player rights. I'm not for them getting paid, because I think they should. But like
should
you said,
get paid.
Man, you need some guardrails, because it is bonkers out here. And, you know, good luck to Luke going forward. I hate to see him leave.
Yeah, me
but
too.
I don't think you can let him hold you over, you know, the fire for money or whatever the situation, or make him be your quarterback one, because, right, you know, sometimes, like, we've seen this happen in the past where the quarterback wants to be the only one in the fold.
That's right.
You don't take another one. It doesn't work out. And then it falls flat on your face. And that's so right. I think I think they made the right move here if the rumors are true. And if not, hey, man, like you said, if you can find somebody to go out and pay you seven figures as an unproven, you know, freshman, hey, power to you.
More power to you.
But let's talk about this entire quarterback room with the thought of Thomas Castellanos. Because right now, as we speak, Thomas Castellanos is on campus. And it sounds like as long as things aren't a complete disaster, this is going to be our guy. Whether we like it or not, this is who Gus wants. Mike, right, got to have a lot of trust in Gus to, you know, be willing to take a risk on a really kind of an unproven quarterback as well. But if that's who they want, this sounds like this is what we're going to get. And, you know, when you look at the rest of the room, you still have Brock. I think now that Luke is out, you know, I think the biggest problem with losing Luke is he was very tight with the team. And right, so that I think hurts. But you're going to bring in a lot of new people and the new staff too.
Right.
But I think you keep Brock. I think you keep Trevor. Haven't heard any indications of them wanting to transfer. Nope. You know, we were talking about this. You also have the Kevin Sperry kid, who think is a fit for Gus's offense. Yep. The one elephant in the room, Michael, that we were talking about before the show is DJU. Like, we've heard that there's strong indications that he wants to get a medical red shirt. He hasn't entered a portal. He hasn't declared for the NFL yet. I don't know why he would, but, you know, he hasn't put in an application, submitted his resume to McDonald's yet. So, like, we don't know what he's going to do. Could he possibly come back? I don't know why, if he was going to come back, you would take Castellanos, because that means DJU is probably going to be your backup, because Castellanos isn't coming in as a backup. That's why he left Boston College. Yeah. So we'll touch on that in a minute. But, man, I mean, this quarterback room's getting full, and DJU's the one that's kind of like, is he going to be the odd man out? Is he going to be back? We just don't know.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, like, what's at play here with DJU. Again, like you've said, we've both heard from different things that we follow and read in the tea leaves that there's smoke around him wanting to get that medical red shirt. And if he gets approved for it, then there's also smoke about returning to Florida State, which is wild in my mind. Like, why would you want to go back to the scene of the crime? Like, I don't understand it. Like, that makes no sense to me. And then again, this is going to be on Mike Norvell of saying, yeah, man, we appreciate what you were able to give us, but it's not going to work out in that sense. The room is already pretty full. You're bringing in the high school recruit kid. You're bringing in a portal player, probably Castellanos, as you said, along with Brock if he stays, and Trevor if he stays. You got four people right there. I don't think you need five QBs on the roster. Now, if you do end up keeping him, then I think it's a conversation of you're taking less NIL money, significantly less than the $800,000 you got this year. I mean, honestly, if you're me, you're not getting more than $100,000, and you might be lucky to get that. You're going to be a backup, and you're going to be a mentor to these guys. If you don't like that, man, there's some G5 programs that probably love to have you. There's some Division II FCS teams that would love to have you, but you can't play here, man. Like, this is not because you're a bad person. Has nothing to do with your character. It's literally because Mike, if I'm Mike, I'm saying I've got to win. This is a pink slip or an extension year, and we're just not going to win with you.
Yeah, and I think it's more like you can be a GA if you want here.
Yeah.
But that's about it. And, you know, because I think Brock would be a good backup this year while he develops for Castellanos, if that's your guy.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess you could see the body type with you know, in the past, he was a good runner with a big arm.
Right.
Kind of like a Cam Newton and Gus's offense, but he was completely immobile last year. Now, granted, we owe owe DJU a little bit of an apology, because we sucked with him. We sucked with Luke, and we sucked with Brock.
With Brock.
The entire, like, he regressed, and the team sucked around him. So, like, it is what it is, man. But I don't think you can keep him personally. But, I mean, we'll see what they decide to do. Right. It sounds like by all, you know, all signs right now are pointing at getting Thomas Castellanos. And so let's talk about that right now, because this is going to be met with some heartburn by this fan base, and us included. Like, I have tried to put together a case to sell us on him, and we're going to talk about why maybe we're not so sure about this. But if you're going to take the guy, you might as well figure it out, right? Because this is who they want, and you got to trust Gus, because he's the guy you brought in. Now, I will say with Castellanos, I do think there is a little bit there of he wasn't a great fit in Bill O'Brien's scheme in 2024, because a lot of people are going to look at he regressed last year. And I think a lot of that had to do with the scheme. That's very much a pro style scheme. When you look at most of the quarterbacks that he had, or the most success he had on offense was with Tom Brady. You know what I mean? One of the most least mobile quarterbacks in the history of football, next to Peyton Manning. And so we know that that's maybe not the greatest scheme for him, but I want to share some thoughts on what he did do well under Bill O'Brien here in just a minute. I also think you have to look at how much talent did he have around him at BC. When people talk about, well, they only went 7-6 the last 2 years or whatever, 6-7, 7-6. We're not trying to do that. Look, man, I understand there's two aspects to look at this, right? We had a very talented roster this year, and we severely underperformed.
That's right.
But there is something to the blue chip ratio, where a team hasn't won a national championship without a blue chip ratio over 50% in the last decade. You got to have Jimmys and Joes to win games. And that's so when you look at BC, I mean, you can have all the talent in the world and not do anything with it, but you got to have talent if you want to do anything in the world, right? If that makes sense. And so when you look at BC, they were the 14th most talented team in the ACC. They had 9 blue chips on that roster last year. We have 44. And Michael, name one Boston College wide receiver.
Wait, and this season?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can name Lewis Bond because I scouted him and I looked at him before we jumped on the show. Okay. But again, that's what I'm saying, man, is like they, you also got to look at the team that is around them too. Right. And so, but let's start with some concerns. Let's start there. Why we think this is like, oh man, red flag city right here. First and foremost, obviously, is 5'9", 196 pounds. He is undersized. Can he be a Kyler Murray? I don't know. But I worry about durability because you're going to ask him to run the ball a lot. And that was a problem that we saw with Jordan Travis. Now, he wasn't 5'9", but he wasn't a big quarterback either.
Right.
And when you asked him to run the ball a lot, he got beat up and it caused him not to be able to run the ball. So durability and size is one of my main concerns when it comes to Castellanos. I think inconsistency is another concern of mine. I think there are some areas that he regressed in 2024 that are a little bit of a red flag for me when you look at what you want to do with him this upcoming season at Florida State. He's got some fumble issues. He's had 7 fumbles in each of the past 2 years, even with the carries decreasing in 2024. Did he quit on his team? There was a report that came out that said, look, there's more to the story. There's a lot that happened behind the scenes that you guys, you know, that's not being told. We don't know the details of that.
Right.
He still left his team.
That's right.
And so it's not a good look when you're trying to rebuild your culture.
Correct.
That's that. He's not elite, and you're going to lose Luke over it. So that's another concern that I didn't like. And the last one that I have here as far as my concerns is that, now, obviously, you know, he's not a great thrower, but we're going to touch on that in a second. He's got good legs, but what concerns me the most is the 2 best games he's had in his career was against Florida State, right?
Hello.
One of those, half the team had the flu. And the next game, we sucked. That was one of our worst. Right. That was one of our worst games on defense. That was before we kind of figured some things out. And what concerns me was Mike saw him ball out versus us 2 years in a row. He did the same thing when he took McKenzie Milton.
Yep.
He said the same thing. He said, I saw what he did against us when he played against us at Memphis, and that did not work out at all.
No.
So what I worry about is Mike has an eye for fool's gold of seeing a coach or a quarterback do well against them and thinking that all of a sudden this is the answer to all our problems. That's what I worry about. Now, obviously, McKenzie Milton could have been great, but, I mean, you pretty much, Mike watched his leg get separated into 2 pieces and still thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
So those are really my main concerns, and then we'll jump into likes, but give me some of yours.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, first of all, the number one concern was exactly the quote you just said from Mike Norvell. I mean, he said this about McKenzie Milton. He watched his leg shamble in 5 billion different pieces, brought him to Florida State. Yes, he almost got us back in the Notre Dame game, but then after that, he was a shell of himself. He wasn't the quarterback. He couldn't do it. And now you're saying this about Thomas Castellano? I mean, again, he looked at DJU last year and thought DJU was, I mean, I know I'm jaded. So listen, Florida State fans, I know Plant the Spear fans. I know I'm jaded. I am seeing everything through the lens of what we saw last year, but that is trauma. Okay. That's called PTSD.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not making a lot of PTSD because there are a lot of people out there who suffer from that, and it's a real thing, but I have Mike Norvell quarterback eyes PTSD. Like, yeah. I do not trust his evaluation of portal quarterbacks, just not at all. And again, I mean, you think about the quarterbacks we brought in from the portal: McKenzie Milton, DJU, not good. The quarterbacks that we've had on campus already that he developed: Jordan Travis, good. So there is some kind of linkage to this. And I just think with Thomas Castellano, I mean, you talk about the inconsistency of passing. I know we're getting to that in a second. You talk about not making great reads. You talk about being super risky with the ball. Now, I heard somebody say, this is the Cam Ward of 2025. The difference between him and Cam Ward was Cam Ward had crazy production, and he had some risk to him. He did have some risk to him. We talked about the fumbles and the interceptions last year when we were scouting Miami. For sure, he did have that, but he had crazy production. I mean, with Thomas Castellanos, you know, he's only thrown 33 touchdowns in his entire career, and he's got 19 interceptions. And I know we're going to get into other stats, but like, that doesn't give you confidence. Yes, he is I wouldn't call him an elite scrambler, but he is a scrambler. So I get that he can run around the ball. But outside of that, tell me what he does best that's going to help you run this offense. And yes, we've seen what Gus Malzahn has done. I mean, the dude literally took a defensive back, turned him into quarterback, and led him to the national championship. But even that defensive back, okay, even that defensive back had more than just scramble ability. The dude could throw the rock. The dude could throw that thing, okay? And so you saw what happened when Gus Malzahn took a risk on another quarterback who was in the same kind of makeup and vein as a DJU with KJ Jefferson at UCF last year. You know, KJ had a great season 3 years ago at Arkansas, was kind of like a Heisman contender, and then kind of waned off that, came to UCF. He was hailed as the savior of UCF, is going to bring him back, and he had a terrible year and ended up getting benched. Yeah. And so that's my thing about this, is like, if we're going to go get a portal quarterback, my concern with Thomas is he the one, Mike, that's going to get you to 8 wins?
Yeah.
That's the question you got to ask yourself.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I think he is, in his defense, I think he's better than people give him credit for, but I don't think he's special. I don't think he's Cam Ward or anything like that. I mean, he did help BC get to 7 wins. So, I mean, hopefully he could help a better team get to 8 wins. But I mean, obviously there's 1,000 red flags that are going to have to be soothed throughout the course of the season. Right. And I mean, obviously he's going to have his task cut out for him against Alabama in game one. But let's go to the likes now. Let's talk about what we do like about him, because obviously if we're going to take him, we need to figure out why we like the guy here. And so I think the first thing that I do like about him is obviously his mobility. He fits Gus's system well. You know, one of the things that we all complained about with Jordan Travis, he didn't run the ball enough. And you saw how much it changed the offense when he did. Well, here's your runner. And obviously, you know, the way he runs would help a struggling offensive line that, like I said, should get better in 2024, but how much is it going to get better in just 1 year? So you can't have a statue back there again. You can't have DJU happen again. You got to have a mobile quarterback. And I got a little stat on that I'll share with you guys here in just a second. The other thing I like is that he was recruited and played under, and he didn't play a lot as a freshman. He played under Gus for 1 year at UCF as a freshman. That means Gus has scouted him for a long period of time. He knows him well. He knows his strengths. He knows his weaknesses. There is I told you this word is going to kick my butt all day. Familiarity with Gus's offense and the terminology and things like that. So I think it's less like, can DJU work for us? We don't know. We got to scout him. We got to see this, that, and the other. Gus knows Thomas Castellanos. And if he thinks that he was good enough to play for him at UCF and all that stuff, then, you know, I think you have to trust his evaluation there. So I like that as well. He is experienced. He has 20 Power 4 starts. He has 1,400 snaps of experience. And he did improve his passing significantly in 2024 under Bill O'Brien in a system that tried to force him to be more of a passer. Yeah. And so obviously it didn't work out well and he got benched, which we'll share some more thoughts on that. But those are some of the positives that I do have with Thomas Castellanos.
Yeah. I mean, the man rushed in 2023. He rushed for, I think, almost 1,100 yards. 1,113 yards on 215 carries. So they really, you know, what was his name? Jeff, what was the coach?
Jeff Hafley.
Jeff Hafley, you know, really allowed him to kind of be in his element. They, you know, they called him a more mobile like offense for him. And you saw him was able to take off to create space. I mean, there's a play where, if I remember correctly, he's scrambling to his left and he throws like a 60-yard dart down the field for a touchdown. Like, I mean, those are intangibles you just can't coach. I mean, that's a Jordan Travis-esque like play, right? And so that is something good you will get with him. You do get that escapability. You know, Jesse, you like to talk about having a quarterback that can make you miss in a phone booth. I think you do get that with Thomas Castellanos, not at the elite level, but I think you get it at the good to great level as well. I think if you can, if this offense, which Gus Malzahn said today, said in his press conference, his opening press conference, that, you know, the foundations of his offense and Mike Norvell's offense is similar, you know, similar terminology. They just do things a little bit differently as far as schematics and formations and stuff like that. I think if you can if his offense is predicated on running the ball downhill, like he said, and being physical in that, and then having those deep shots, I do think a Castellanos could work in that kind of system where he's mobile, he can run, he can be that 11th person that gives you, that gives the defense trouble, and then hits those big shots that we thought DJU would be able to do.
Right.
If he can do that and be accurate with those, then yes, I can see a pathway to him being a decent to good fit for this offense.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, when you just look at some specific areas here, like I know he had a major regression in QBR and everybody's been throwing that red flag up there. And I'm with you. It went from 63.7 in 2023, which was pretty good in a more system fit for him, because that takes into account your rushing and all that stuff.
Right.
QBR went down to 38.3, which was 111th in 2024. Yeah. That's terrible.
That's a drop. Yeah.
I mean, it's bad. But again, like you look at the type of quarterback that he is. And like Gus at UCF didn't have a ton of success there, but they won 9 games in 2022 with John Rhys Plumlee there.
Right.
When you look at the numbers, they're very similar to what Castellanos put up. When they went to the Big 12, he was still the quarterback there. Very similar numbers again. And I know they didn't have a great season there, but none of the teams that transitioned from the G5 to the P4 had a winning record that year.
Yeah.
But when you, and even then, like last year, I was looking at some numbers and he took 18 sacks. And so I'm like, well, that's, I don't like that, because that was only in 8 games.
Right.
But then the backup came up and came in and took 9 sacks in 5 games. So their offensive line just wasn't very good. But some of the areas when you look at the improvement, because I think what was really displayed in 2023 was his mobile ability, as you talked about. From a sack adjusted standpoint, he had 208 carries, 1,222 yards, 13 rushing touchdowns, and 7 fumbles. I mean, he was running all over the place. Had 917 yards on design runs. Michael, we haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher at the running back position since 2017, with Cam Akers. So, like, you have a quarterback who's done that, run for 1,200 sack adjusted yards. So, I mean, he's running all over the place, but when you look at 23 to 24, where he regressed, right? And everyone said, well, I don't like what he did. You put him in a different system. You tried to make him a passer. He got better as a passer.
Right.
So his completion percentage went up by 4.5%. His yards per attempt went up to 1.7 yards per attempt, which was actually top 15 in the country.
Yeah.
Touchdown to interceptions, he threw for 3 more touchdowns in 5 less games in 24 than 23.
Yep.
And really, you almost got to say 6 less games, because he didn't play very much in the Syracuse game, which is where he got benched. But he did throw a touchdown there. He threw 9 less interceptions on the year. So his touchdown to interception ratio was a lot better. His PFF pass grade, pass only, this is not for rushing or anything like that, went from 57.7 up to 74.2 last year, 41st in the country. Not terrible. One of the areas he got a lot better was his vertical passing game, which is something we just heard Gus talk about, those deep shots. And so when you look at this from the 10 to 20 plus yard passing, because he's always been pretty good at the short throws, everybody is.
Right.
But when you look at that mid to deep range passing, in 2023, he threw 6 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, and at a 36.7% completion percentage. In 2024, those numbers were 11 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions, and a 45.5% completion percentage. Now, I know the completion percentage sounds low, but it's low on deep throws.
Right.
But that's a significant improvement. A couple other areas I want to touch on real quick. The amount of games where he threw for 200 or more yards passing. In 2023, that number was 4. In 2024, that number was also 4. Remember, he just played in 5 less games.
Right.
Games with a 60-plus percent completion percentage or greater. 2023, 4. 2024, 5. So he had more games with a 60-plus completion percentage with 5 less games played in the season.
Right.
Now, the rushing is where you really saw it fall off a cliff. 100-plus yard games. He had 5 in 2023 and 0 in 2024, but he also had 5 less attempts per game in 2024. So I think when like I said, when you look back at the numbers, the designed runs is where he really killed it. He actually wasn't like, he had a lot of scrambling yards. That was great. His scramble runs in 23 was only 42, but he had 125 designed runs in 2023. So he really makes his hay on designed runs. And so I think if you get him back in an offense where he has improved his passing and now you let him take that design run back, I think that's going to help him. And then let me just share 2 more stats and then I'll throw it back to you for some thoughts on these. His allowed pressures he was 46 in the country. The amount of pressures he's responsible for, like holding the ball too long, was only 14.3% in the Power Four. Luke was at 13.3. The high was 30.9. The low was 4.1. So he's about middle of the pack there. So he's not holding the ball real, real long.
Yeah.
Now, he was under pressure a significant amount, 34.2%, 31st in the country. Now, here's what's sad, Michael. When I was looking up these pressure numbers in the Power Four, Luke and DJU were both in the top five at over 43%, and Brock Glenn was 10th at 40.7%. Our offensive line was trash last year.
Hot garbage.
And so this is why I think his ability makes such a difference, right? So BC in the Power Four, when I do this on PFF, there are 69 teams that come up in the Power Four. In 2022, BC's offensive line was 66 of 69 teams in pass block efficiency. In 2023, when they let Castellanos run wild, that offensive line, which didn't sign a bunch of NFL talent, went from 66 to fourth. Yeah. And then in 2024, when they stopped letting him run so much, it dropped back down to 52nd.
Yeah.
And guess what? No coincidence where our offensive line was last year. 66 of 69 teams. So there are a lot of positives, as many negatives as we can name. There are a lot of positives to bringing him in. I think where you could see if he fits well in this offense, and he has made improvements that a lot of people don't focus on because he got benched and he left. I think if you combine those two things, I can see where this will work to get you. Is he a national championship quarterback? Probably not.
Right.
Was Nick Marshall a national championship quarterback? I would have said no to that too, but he sure proved us wrong. I know that was 10 years ago, but man, I can see where he can win you some games in the ACC.
Yeah, I can see where he can win some games in the ACC. I can see, you know, whether the regression or the improvement from, you know, he ran a more wide open run quarterback oriented offense in 2023, and he threw 15 interceptions. Whereas in this year, you know, he's run a more pro scheme and he's threw 10 less interceptions. Is it the scheme or was it him? And so I just think that, you know, we're going to end up seeing. I think he can be decent. I think if he is brought in not to, again, to use the same moniker we said with DJU, if he's brought in to not win you games, but not to lose you games, and we can run the ball and we can be as effective as catching and being physically tough, then I think, yeah, I could see where it can work. And so, listen, Mike and Gus are hanging their proverbial careers on this portal quarterback. So if it's Thomas Castellano, you're going to ride or die with him.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I just want to put a bug in your brain that, like, we have red flags, man. We both have them. I have them too. I don't think he's a playoff caliber quarterback, but I think in this system, with the concepts that they'll use him for, with the improvement you've shown, because remember that first year at BC was his first year as a starter ever. And so, like, he had a bad, you know, touchdown to interception ratio. He wasn't electric in every single game, but that was also his first year as a starter as only a true sophomore. So again, I think he did get better at BC in year two. I just think it was the wrong scheme for his play style. Right. And so, so we're going to pick up the pace a little bit here and we're going to talk a little bit more. Let's just let it play out. Right.
See what it is. Yeah.
I don't think it's as bad as people, like I said, I don't think he's as bad as people think he is. I don't think he's as good as maybe we want him to be. I think that's a fair way to say it. Right. But I mean, look, when you look at last year, man, I would take an average college quarterback at this point. I mean, as sad as it is to say, because you can run the ball, right? And you, as long as you can run the ball, and again, Gus's offense is not predicated on throwing for 4,000 yards. But let's talk about this portal real quick, man, because it's wide open. We got a lot of players leaving. I'm just going to throw some names out here, man. We're going to go through these real quick. I'm not going to name the non-scholarship guys that aren't really going to make a difference here. So obviously we'll lead off with Luke Cromanhawk has entered the portal. Destin Hill is entering the portal. Now these are either entered or rumored per 247. Right. That's where I got these. Destin Hill, that's a disappointment there. I think you were hoping for him to be back next year. Yep. It's a little disappointing that Mike, you know, went kind of stuck his neck out for the kid and then he kind of just jumped ship on him. But Mike could have told him to take it on down the road. So we don't know.
That could have happened too. That's true.
Darian Williamson hit the portal. You know, good riddance. Deuce Spann didn't, you know, I don't mean disrespectful to these kids. I'm just saying, like, none of these guys really made an impact. Duspan, Jackson West, Brian Courtney, Jarrell Powers. You lose three tight ends, but you got some good ones. We're going to talk about some names here in a minute that you're going to bring in. You're looking at bringing in a tight end, so you had to clear some room. You got to make room.
Right.
Julian Armella, that experiment. I hate to see a legacy go that has finally come to an end.
Right.
I'll be really interested to see what he does as his next stop. Like, was he really that overhyped, or was Alex Atkins just that bad of a developer?
I swear, if we see another Landon Dickerson, I'm going to be ticked.
Right, exactly. That will be an indictment on Atkins. Lamont Green Jr., unfortunately, another legacy that is hitting the portal that you never really got to see anything from. Byron Turner Jr. hits the portal. You know, a good rotational guy, but I'll touch on some names here in a second that I think we're going to get that will pretty much be a net positive when you lose him. Dante Anderson, never saw much from him. Tamawa Durajaye, man, that was weird. I thought he was going to play last year. From what I heard, he just looked terrible in practice.
Yep.
And I guess you could have given him a look. We weren't great. A 2-10. Give everybody a look. right? Pull a fan out of the stands, give him a look. But he moves on after 1 year, basically didn't do anything there. Now, one I think that does hurt, that is disappointing, is Omar Graham Jr.
Yeah.
Michael, if you went in the Wayback Machine, I would have never saw myself saying that. But the kid became good by the end of the year.
That's
man.
Right. We became OG fans very quickly.
Exactly. So I was a little disappointed to see him hit the portal. DeMarco Ward and Amarion Cooper is back in the portal. Didn't do anything here. And then the most recent one that you texted me about right before we jumped on the show is Marvin Jones Jr. And look, man, I hate it because it's MJJ Jr.
Yeah.
And his dad is an FSU legend. I wanted it to work out well here. He wasn't great, and he cost you a lot of money. So
that's right.
I don't know why he hits the portal. Maybe it's because you're bringing in a bunch of defensive ends. You're bringing in some other guys. But, man, so far when I look down this list, I think other than Omar Graham Jr., in 2025, you didn't lose anything. And then, you know, maybe it stinks that you lost Destin Hill if he'd have come back. Luke Cromanhawk for the future. The long-term hurts, but I don't really see anybody so far that is really hurting you. And I think Mike is doing a pretty good job of cleaning house.
Yeah, I think that hurts you next year unless you're able to bring in some good portal productive prospects, which we think they are, is really Destin Hill and Omar Graham. Because Omar Graham, like you said, we became OG fans. He got better. He was literally the worst linebacker in that room and then got better as the season went on. And then I think just the Destin Hill thing, man, all that energy time that Mike was loyal to him and he, you know, ends up leaving. I just think that's just unfortunate. Long term, yes, Luke hurts long term. It's another indictment on Mike Norvell's development of quarterbacks here at Florida State in the 5 years that he's been here. And I think the biggest disappointment of everyone that is on this list is MJJ Jr. I mean, you know, it was a huge recruitment that Florida State ended up losing. He goes to Georgia, he plays some, but we think, well, maybe he just didn't really like it. Maybe he comes back home to Florida State, he'll turn up to be the player he was what we projected him to be. But he didn't. And so it's just kind of like, all right, man, you know, it's unfortunate. Didn't work out here, but yeah, we can't continue to spend the kind of money we did on you and not get the production we think we should get. So we're going to go ahead and just say our goodbyes and hope you good luck wherever you go, bud.
Wish you the best. And then, you know, there was a lot of loafing and effort issues there too. And I think the ones that hurt you the most just because of what you have coming behind them is not a lot. That is the ones that declared for the draft. Daryl Jackson, Josh Farmer, AZ Thomas, and, of course, Jeremiah Byers wasn't really great, so I think you can replace him. AZ Thomas and Josh Farmer are the two that hurt you the most, right? Daryl Jackson wasn't great, but, again, like, you just don't have a lot of defensive tackle coming behind them, so that's the hard part. I mean, you got Daniel Lyons, and if you truly go to a 3-3-5, then you don't need a lot of depth. Right. But at the same time, like, you are going to be multiple, so you need a depth of defensive tackles.
That's
and even we're going to touch on the coach comments here in a little bit, but he even mentioned that they're going to be young up front this year, especially in the front seven. So let's move on to some targets that we got here. I got a few names for you, Michael. I'm not really going to concentrate on guys that like, oh, we like this guy
or we
want this guy. I'm looking at guys that are either coming to visit or have an offer from Florida State or guys that are very likely targets here. Of course, there's a lot of guys that we want. I mean, there's a ton of names in the portal that I'd love to have.
Right.
But some of the ones that I've heard so far, will start on the offensive side of the ball. Caden Kilter, offensive line from UCF, redshirt sophomore, 6'3", 295. Started 13 games the past 2 years, 895 snaps total, all at center, which is a position of need. Now that Maurice has moved on and you don't really have a sure backup there.
Are you sure Maurice has moved on?
I hope so. good luck, bro. 67.8 PFF grade in 2024. It's pretty close to being really good. You know, 70s, that really good power five starter status. So good PFF grade there. Has taken a visit to Mississippi State, is expected to visit Florida State as well, does have an offer there. Again, I like it that you're bringing in a guy that has worked with your offensive line coach in your offensive system at center, knows the calls that you want to make in this offense. I think it would be massive if you could land him. And let me give one more, and then you know we'll get some thoughts here, because this is another offensive lineman, Marcellus Marshall, offensive lineman, UCF, another UCF guy. Now, I know we're probably thinking like, oh, God, were we just going to take their offensive line? Yes, we're going to try because we need help. Because
their offensive line was successful.
Exactly. They had a great rushing offense. So they visited Tallahassee. He visited Tallahassee, or he is visiting.
Tomorrow.
Ooh, that was a tough one. Tomorrow on Thursday. 6'5", 310. Michael, that'll play all day long.
Absolutely.
Exactly. He is a senior, 35 starts over the past 3 years between Kent State in 2022 and then UCF the past two seasons. Guy's got 2,500 snaps of experience in college. He did start at tackle for Kent State. Then he's primarily played on the interior at guard for UCF. PFF grade, not great, 58.1. But again, an experienced guy that's familiar with your offensive line coach and familiar with this offense. So you get these two guys, man, that's two targets that I really like on the offensive line that can be an immediate help. You know, do keep in mind, Richie Leonard could be coming back.
Yep.
There's one there. And then if you can get anything out of the young guys, and I think they'll pursue more, but that's two names up front on the offensive line that I like.
Yeah. I think the other name I'll throw at you real quick is Joshua Braun from Arkansas. He started all 12 games for them and was a productive player. And Arkansas loves to run the ball. And so, man, if they have mutual interests, so I'm assuming a scholarship offer has gone out to them. But I think if you can, because you need to bring in at least 5 to 6 bodies on the offensive line to see what you got. Plus, I know, Gus Malzahn talked about like looking at the current offensive line structure and seeing what they have there as well, too. So I think, but just bringing those new bodies in, proven starters who've done it and have been successful at their schools, especially the UCF kid. Boy, I'd love to have him. I think that'll be good.
Yeah, because I think you should, on the offensive line, with how bad it was last year, personally, I would say, and I love the Herb Hand hire. We're going to talk about that in a second. But I think you should plan on bringing in 5 totally new starters. And then if you get anyone from last year's team, including Richie Leonard, that can play for you, that's a positive. But I think you should plan on your entire 5, maybe even 6 or 7, being brand new. A couple of names to know here at the pass catchers. That is Randy Pittman, tight end, also from UCF. He's a junior, 6'2", 230, played for Gus and was committed to FSU for a little bit out of high school. Productive guy, 51 receptions, 631 yards and 2 touchdowns last year. Started 11 games at UCF. Played in every game the past 2 years. Over 1,000 snaps of experience, 62.6 PFF grade. I think that's a real big name to watch there. There is another tight end, Terrence Carter from Louisiana. He is planning to visit soon, probably as early as next week. Redshirt sophomore, 6'2", 240. Two really Jaheim Bell type body types here with the shorter, lighter tight ends here. But another productive guy, 48 receptions, 689 yards, 4 touchdowns, started all 13 games this year, has over 990 snaps total experience, 83.2 PFF grade in 24, 78.5 in 23. I will take that all day long.
Yeah.
Blocking grades are a little hit or miss, but he has just music to my ears, Michael. 77.4% catch rate and only a 5.9% drop percentage. So I like these two. A couple names here to watch at wide receiver. Javon Tracy out of Miami of Ohio, redshirt sophomore, 6 foot, 206, 20 starts, almost 1,200 snaps of experience. 57 receptions, 818 yards, and 7 touchdowns last year. 66.3% catch rate, 3.4% drop rate. Love it. 77.3 PFF grade. FSU wants to be his final visit, and that's hopefully going to be next week. Now, I kind of like the first visit on a transfer.
Maybe you
could stop him in their tracks right there, but he is coming on a visit. He does have an offer. Another Miami of Ohio receiver is Reggie Virgil.
This is my favorite.
He does have an offer. See, I'm a little mixed on this guy. Junior, 6'4", 190 pounds. I love that. 41 receptions, 816 yards, 9 touchdowns, 69 PFF. Love it. Here is my concern. 50% reception rate, 10.9% drop rate, 7 games with below a 50% catch rate. That does concern me, but he's a big body receiver. You know, maybe he was just a lot of downfield targets for them. I don't really know without watching the film, but he does have an offer from Florida and Miami as well. So you're going to compete for him, but he is from Florida. So you get some home cooking there. And then the last offensive name I got to watch here is Berrion Brown, wide receiver from Kentucky. 6'1", 182, has been linked to Florida State. 26 starts, almost 1,400 snaps, 29 receptions, 361 yards, and 3 touchdowns. However, where he's really valuable is as a kick returner.
Oh, man.
400-plus yards every single year in 3 years at Kentucky and at least one touchdown per year. So, man, that's the rest of the offensive names that I got that are really hot and tied to Florida State. And so give me some thoughts on those guys.
Yeah, listen, I like the Reggie Virgil kid because I like the 6'4", 190. You know, I haven't seen the film either, so now you've got me a little bit concerned with the drop ratio there. But I do think as a big target, you know, I mean, you just look at what we did in the high school recruiting. We went out and got some big receivers, some tall receivers, because we want to take shots down the field. We want to jump balls in the end zone. We want to give our quarterback the opportunity to make those throws, to get those big body receivers. We saw what we were able to do in this offense with a Johnny Wilson. Like, we didn't have that type of receiver because, you know, Darion Williamson never and Deuce Band never turned into those types of receivers. So if we can go out and get those, I like that. I like the Berrion Brown potential. I know they have mutual interest. I don't know if he's been offered just yet, but I got to watch him. You guys might know I'm a big Kentucky basketball fan. I lived in the state of Kentucky for 8 years, and so I still hear all the stuff about that. And this was one that they were devastated to lose. They did not want to lose Berrion Brown. I know there's some big name programs that are going after him. There's also another wide receiver coming out of state out of the University of Kentucky called Dane Key, and Georgia and all of them are after him. I don't know if Florida State's going to put their name in him for him, but that would be great as well too. Those two receivers are some of the best receivers I've seen play. But I would be happy with any of these collections receiver because they're produced. They've got production. They've got a high upside. Their ceiling is really high. And they don't have like a super low floor. You know, obviously the Reggie Virgil kid with the drop ratio, that's an issue. But I think that could be something that could be worked through in with Gus and whoever the wide receiver coach is going to be.
Right. I heard the Key kid is actually the better of the two, but
he's
going to be a lot harder to get.
He's going
to
be a lot of money.
Yep. Now, a couple names on defense here. I only got really three for you right now to really, really watch. And again, we'll progress through these as the names emerge. We'll make sure to get you the more names. Jamari Butler, D lineman from Nebraska. Remember, Michael, you had even said this. It's not all about who the coach is. It's who they can bring.
Who you can bring.
And it looks like we're going to bring some guys. So, Jamari Butler, D-line, Nebraska, redshirt senior, 6'5", 260. So, your edge rusher there. He's down to three schools, FSU, LSU, and Texas A&M. So you're in it, and it also definitely helps that you have his DC and his D-line coach on staff. 22 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 2 sacks in 2024. Has 16 total starts, 837 snaps, appeared in all but 2 games over the past 3 years, which he missed a couple with injury. Had a 61.9 PFF and 71.1 in 23. So I like it if you can get him. The other name that I'm pretty sure you're almost a lock to get here, and that is James Williams, defensive lineman from Nebraska as well. Redshirt sophomore, 6'6", 250, edge rusher type of body here. Came from JUCO, redshirted in 2023 at Nebraska, did play in the 4 games, was not a starter, but played in every game for Nebraska in 2024. 14 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. Actually, second in the team.
Right.
In sacks, I actually hear his nickname is like the sack guy or whatever. I don't want to give a nickname a sack because that might be a little embarrassing. But, 74.2 PFF. I love it. But he is very close with Terrence Knighton. Said he is a father figure. Most of you probably seen the video going around. So I think you're pretty much a lock to get him. And then the last name that I have here right now is Jalen Smith, linebacker from Tennessee. Redshirt freshman, 6'2", 230. Played in all 12 games. Was not a starter. 270 snaps of experience in 2 years, 71.3 PFF, 34 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss. I'm not sure if he's got an offer yet, but I know it has been discussed that they're trying to get him in for a visit, which Ernie Sims is his contact. So it sounds like they're going to keep Ernie Sims around on the staff, which I like. Yeah. So those are three names I got for you. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more that are going to emerge very soon. There's some linebackers from Nebraska that I like as well. But those are three names I got. I don't really think you need to go after any DBs unless you have, like, you know, maybe a game-changing safety or something, yeah. But we'll see. But those are three names that I feel pretty good Florida State has a chance to make an impact with.
I'll just throw you one more that I feel really good is going to be a part of actually that trio of edge rushers. So you said James Williams and Jamari Butler. I'll throw in, I can't say his last name, but I'm going to just call him Prince Will.
Yeah.
Prince Will U.
Princely Unamain. I can't say it either.
Yes, yeah.
I can't say
anyways,
it.
Former four-star edge player. I don't have his stats in front of me. Very productive player at Nebraska. Loves Terrence Knightley as his DL coach. And is like the three of them, James, Jamari, and Prince Will, are all visiting on the 16th of December. They're all coming together. I think that's a triple package deal. Yep. I think if they're going to come here, they're all three going to come here. And man, that's a great Christmas present for Florida State fans.
Yes, it is. And I think that's probably why you saw MJJ Jr. take a walk, because yep. maybe they weren't going to pay him. Because I will say the Prince, Prince Will. I think his brother's Prince Lee.
Yeah.
The one that left Florida. But I want to say there for a little while, he was the top rated player in the portal once he entered. And so, yeah, man, I think that would be an absolute huge get if you could get him too. The last thing, because we got to start winding this thing down here. The last thing I want to talk about real quick is obviously last time we talked, some coaching hires have been made official. DC D line coach have obviously been made official. That's great. Evan Cooper hired as the safeties coach. He was Nebraska's DB coach and pass game coordinator in 23, was not on staff in 24. There's some personal reasons there. I don't want to get into that.
Right.
Let's just say we hope a Jeremy Pruitt situation doesn't happen in Tallahassee. That's what I've heard. He also was with the Carolina Panthers with Matt Rhule as the cornerbacks coach and director of player evaluations in 2020 through 2022. So I like that, you know, NFL experience. Don't know a whole lot about him, but I've seen a few videos. He's an intense guy. And so I like that as well. Obviously, Herb Hand took a while to get announced, but he has been announced. Love the hire. 25 years of experience, produced a lot of all-conference offensive linemen and a few NFL draft picks. Three-time offensive line coach of the year finalist. Love that hire as well. Still waiting on a wide receivers coach. Unfortunately, I've heard Tyquan Underwood, who is with the Patriots currently, did turn it down, as well as Iowa State's wide receiver coach. So you're kind of having to run down the list a little bit here. I don't know if maybe that's because you're, you know, the Gustav system and all that stuff, but, you know, we'll see what shakes out as far as wide receiver coach goes, hopefully in the next couple of days. But the last thing, because I want to get your thoughts on this, Michael, is we got to hear from the coordinators for the first time today. And
yes,
I was thoroughly impressed with Tony White. I know actions speak louder than words. I love it. But I just got a couple quick highlights from Gus and Tony. The one thing I like that was touched on by Gus, Mike, Gus, and Herb were together at Tulsa. I know that was a long time ago, 2007, 2008, I believe. But they produced two of the best offenses in the history of college football. I think they're like still top three scoring offenses ever.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, but that was a dangerous combination. So if you can get anything like that back together, I like the continuity of having guys that know each other. I like that. The foundation of the offense is from the same family, same terminology, wants to play fast, wants to run the football downhill and pass the ball vertically. I like that too. Looks for a proven winner at quarterback and a guy that can make the ones around him better. I don't know where he sees that with Thomas Castellanos, but hey, that's neither here nor there. He has used peer passers in the past with Stidham and Bo Nix. He's also used runners with Cam Newton and Nick Marshall. So he can kind of flex back with both ways. The other thing was with Kroma, the new running back. First off, golly, have you seen his film? How's that kid not a five-star?
Right?
My goodness.
Gosh.
But Gus did touch on him and said that he had a freshman running back as the MVP in the 2010 National Championship game. So love the thoughts there from Gus. And then, you know, I'll let you give me some follow-up there, and then we'll talk about Tony, and we'll wrap this thing up.
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, immediately first thing that stood out to me was the fact that Gus said he will be calling the plays, we'll be calling the plays. That was as definitive as you were going to get.
Yeah.
And so that him and Mike would game plan during the week, and then he's going to be calling the plays. Listen, you don't get Gus Malzahn if he's just going to be a offensive coordinator just in title only. So, you know, kudos to Mike, who said, hey, if it's best for the program, I'm being willing to give it up. I love the fact that he's an old school football coach, and he even talked about in his press conference of how a lot of the responsibilities of being a head coach he definitely thought about in this era of college football. And I think with all that responsibility removed, what makes me feel better about this hire is that we might get the Gus Malzahn of of Cam Newton era, of the Tulsa right. era, where he's not worried about, you know, trying to raise, you know, millions of dollars in NIL and player contracts. He's just coaching football. He's just developing players. So if that's the Gus Malzahn we get, then he's going to be coming up with scheming. He can scheme with the best of them. So I really love that about Gus Malzahn. And I love the fact that he said that he didn't steal the signs.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Look at the yards per play with towels and without. Okay.
Exactly.
Gus, we know. And then the last thing we got for you today is on Tony White, man. I love some of his comments. Said that it really the relationship started from the connections at Arizona State. But what was so attractive to him was being in Florida with a place where you have this much talent available and the ability to win a national championship. This is something that Gus mentioned too. Something I loved from both coaches was, look, you're in a talent-rich state at a program that can win it all. And they know that that's harder to do at Nebraska and UCF. Yep. They want to win on the highest level. Biggest aspect is the players. Look, scheme is important, but you have to be multiple to maximize the players that you already have. He said, you know, the 3-3-5 comes from places where it's tough to recruit defensive linemen, like a Syracuse or wherever he was out west. I think San Jose State. So he said, you know, they ran a lot more four-man fronts at Nebraska because they were able to recruit defensive linemen better. I think in Florida, you'll see him at you know, in the state of Florida where you can recruit these defensive linemen. I think you'll see them be more multiple because of the resources that they will have. But the one thing that I like about it, you know, he said being multiple allows you to attack offenses in different ways. And because offenses nowadays are too smart to just attack with, you know, one formation and all this stuff, you got to throw a lot at them. And I like that. I like the multiple aspect of the defense. But at the end of the day, man, he said, no matter what scheme you run, it's all about the process and how you play. You have to play physical, which means you have to be physical. Oh, Michael, this was the best thing I heard in the whole conference. You have to be physical in practice and put in the work. Nebraska right. players really own that from the starter to the backup. Gus touched on the physicality, too. Thank you. This is something that I have wanted for a long time, was them to be more physical in practice and to thud it up and hit. I can't stand the not tackling in practice. So
right.
love it, man. But those were really my takeaways from hearing Tony White talk.
Yeah, I thought, if there was a possibility of winning the press conference, I really thought Tony White did. I loved when he talked about the history and the tradition of Florida State, some of the things he didn't know. Man didn't even know we were building a players-only facility, and he said that's going to be a great help in recruiting. Also, he talked about, you know, that, you know, everybody wants to pin like, oh, this is a system, this is a system. He said, look, we're going to be multiple. We're going to put our players in the best position to be aggressive. That's what I want to hear, man. Instead of just running a two shell defense and hoping and keeping everything in front of you and hoping your D line can get it. Okay. Yeah. But let's help out the D line. Let's blitz a little bit. Let's attack. Let's be aggressive. So I love that, as well as the fact that, he didn't have like a close connection with Mike DeVell, but they were only separated by 2 degrees of coaches. And, matter of fact, the man took a pay cut to come to Florida State.
Yeah, took a pay cut.
And so that tells you that the name on the front of the jersey still means something to people.
Yeah, that logo still holds weight. And being in the state of Florida where you can go recruit elite talent and win, you know, he's been a Syracuse in Nebraska. It's hard to recruit those places like it is at Florida. So, man, I will say, like you said, if you could win a press conference, I was very impressed by Tony White. Now, he's got to go prove it on the field, but I love what I'm hearing so far. So that's going to do it for today, guys. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Make sure you check out Alumni Hall and check out that. Take advantage. It's almost Christmas time, Michael. Take advantage of that sale. The code is Seminole30 to get 30% off. So drop a like and subscribe if you'd enjoyed this episode. Rate and review on the podcast. We'll be back with you guys before too long, man, because this news cycle is not slowing down. So we'll be back with you guys soon. So appreciate you guys watching. Stay tuned, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Knowles.